athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
This is a journey into sound.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of Box to Row. It's a Memorial Day weekend edition of the program. And when I think of this song, Eric B. and Rakim Paid in Full, but it's the remix by Cold Cut. And I think the first year that I heard this may have been either 86 or 87. And most of the hip-hop I was into, like, so I mostly listened to the radio, didn't buy albums per se. Well, if I bought albums, they weren't hip-hop albums. I was really into New Edition. I think one of the first tapes I ever bought may have been the Candy Girl album by New Edition, but listen to the radio a lot. I remember Salt and Pepper, I'll Take Your Man, Whenever I Feel Like It. You know, songs like that they played on the radio. Curtis Blow's If I Ruled the World and Had All the Girls, all those kinds of songs, right? But I was at basketball camp, College Park, Maryland. Lefter Gizelle's basketball camp is the first time that I remember hearing this song. And it was, the beat was so tight, so awesome, unlike anything I had really ever heard until that point. I remember, of course, Basketball by Curtis Blow and all of those great songs. And I instantly became a fan of Eric B. and Rakim. And so I'm still wondering to this day why Eric B. and Rakim are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, I think certainly they had their issues as a duo after a while. Certainly they had issues with the record label. But, I mean, for about 4 or 5 years, I mean, I don't know, in the golden age of hip-hop, I don't know if there was a better MC than Rakim. And really, they both needed each other. It wasn't like Rakim, as great as an MC as he was, Eric B. was as great a DJ, right? Like, they were so awesome together, they needed each other. And when they were apart, it wasn't magic, right? Like Rakim did his thing, but it wasn't like when he and Eric B. were together and vice versa. And as a matter of fact, we had Rakim on the show back in 2012. And if you go to, if you visit our website, Radio Boss, or one of our subsidiaries, or our project, as I like to call it, our Radio Boss project, if you visit radio-boss.com, radio-boss.com, you can listen to that interview. But this, I mean, this song was tremendous. Again, first time I heard it, Lefty Gizelle's basketball camp, was out on my own. You know, college life in a way, right? We stayed in the dorms. We had a chance to visit the student union. At the time, they had video games. You had the camps. Lefty Gizelle was there. So it was just a really good time. I probably was like 11 years old, maybe 12 or something like that. But see, Memorial Day weekend, and salute and shots out to all of our troops, because this is a weekend, and Monday in particular, when we remember those that served our country, those that have fallen. So we want to give special shots out to our troops. And it's also, for me, a time of reflection, when I reflect over my life and where I've come from and where God has brought me. And I mean, I'm telling you, but this song and some of the songs we're going to play today, as a matter of fact, or you're going to hear, I should say, here on the program, a reflection of various times that I can remember, but that were great times in my life. So we got a lot to get to. Look, I had the Pacers, and by the way, of course, thank you as always for making Box to Row a part of your day. Whether you're listening to us, and we got so many great affiliates across the country and really overseas also that carry Box to Row. Whether you're listening to us in Birmingham, right, on WSYP FM, or perhaps you're listening to us in our nation's capital on the HD3 channel of WHUR. Maybe you're listening to us in Daytona Beach on WELE 1380. Whether you're listening to us online, on TuneIn, whether you're listening to us on SiriusXM channels 142 or 84, wherever and however you're listening, thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. So prior to the series, I had the Pacers defeating the Knicks prior to the series. But as that game went on, and look, all the Pacers needed to do was get one. That's all the Pacers needed to do. Get one on the road, go back to Indiana, go back to Indianapolis, and see what happens from there. Well, as game one went on, I'm looking, it's a 14-point lead with like less than 3 minutes remaining for the Knicks. And I'm like, yeah, this just isn't happening. And then, even though Indiana kind of kept it close, seemed like it was like 90 seconds remaining, a minute and a half, perhaps it was even a minute and 36 seconds remaining in the game. And Jalen Brunson hits a shot from the left baseline. And I'm like, oh, ball game. They went up, the Knicks went up by 9, but it wasn't ball game. And this is the thing. Like, who knew? Let me take you back with the Pacers, right? Let's go back to the Pacers and the first series against the Bucks. And to me, what amounted to an inconsequential game. The Pacers up 3-1 against the Bucks. In game four, down, the game went into overtime. The Warriors are up or down like 9 points with like a 7 point, something like that, with like a minute remaining. And to me, it was, I mean, look, Damian Lillard was injured. He was out. It was just, okay, the Bucks would extend the series and then the Pacers would win in the next game. But the Pacers closed that game out after being down. I wasn't watching the game, but I was listening to the game. I was actually listening to a radio program, and they were saying, oh, the Pacers are up by 7 points with 50-some seconds remaining. And, you know, at that point, you know, particularly in the NBA, you're like, okay, the game is going to be over. And it was not. And that's the thing. What's been so great about these playoffs also is, with respect to the Pacers, who won that game, and who thought that game, and then they won another game in that sort of similar manner, and now they beat the Knicks to at that time take a 1-0 lead when it should have been a 1-0 lead for the Knicks. That was an absolutely huge win, as well as the Knicks are playing. And see, that was the thing about it. Like, I knew the Pacers were a good fourth quarter team, but to me, the Knicks were a better fourth quarter team. And when I think about the Knicks and the run that the Knicks made against the Celtics, look, you can say Jason Tatum was out, and that was one of the reasons that the Knicks won that series. A lot of Knicks fans won't tell you that, but I thought that the game that Tatum went down, that the Knicks were going to win that game anyway, because they played so well in the fourth quarter. And that's what they did against the Celtics. They played well in the fourth quarter, and that's what and throughout these playoffs. And you knew when Jalen Brunson was hitting shots and Karl-Anthony Towns coming to play in the fourth quarter and Josh Hart giving you that energy and the defense, Robinson, OG, I mean, all of these guys that the Knicks have. And I just felt like, okay, well, hey, not only are the Pacers going to lose this game, I wonder if the Pacers are even going to win this series, because the Knicks had so much momentum coming out of the Celtics series. And the Garden was unbelievable for the Knicks, but it got quiet quickly, particularly in the overtime period and towards the end of the game. Remember, Tyrese Halliburton hits that shot that everybody thought was a three-pointer. He gives the choke sign a la Reggie Miller against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, and it turned out to be a two, but the Pacers finished the game off anyway. And I'm thinking to myself, really? I mean, Knicks, are you serious? And so I think my prediction is going to come true that the Pacers are going to win this series. Obviously, we go now to game three in Indiana on Sunday. The Pacers really have a chance to take control of this series. And if you're the Knicks, and look, I when you think about the Knicks, I mean, these Knicks fans they want the Knicks to play well. They want the Knicks to do well. The Knicks haven't done well in quite some time. And so that was a huge disappointment, especially coming off the series against the Celtics. Unbelievable. So we're going to talk some NBA. I want to talk about this Minnesota in particular today here on the program. I want to talk about this series between Minnesota and OKC. So we're going to talk a lot about that. And then I've got some other topics of conversation that I want to get to today on the program. Like, can I ask this question to you or make this statement? The NBA is missing showmen. The NBA is missing showmen, right? Like, there was a video of Jason Williams. Remember Jason Williams that played with the Sacramento Kings, played, won a championship with the Miami Heat. Like, he was a showman, right? Magic Johnson was a showman. Jason Kidd was a showman. That's what we're missing in the NBA these days. So I want to talk about that as well. I want to talk some Pete Rose, even though he's passed on. I want to talk about Pete Rose today also on the program as well. So we've got a lot to get to today here on Box to Row on this Memorial Day weekend edition. Keep it locked.
Do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call. Because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at crazy low prices. They have access to great prices and discounts at over 500 different airlines. Plus 300,000 hotels and rental car companies. Their prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find the best price for you. Call SmartFares today and get ready to see the world with a fat wallet.
800-313-7757. 800-313-7757. 800-313-7757. That's 800-313-7757.
Hey there, fellow travelers. It's me, the Hotel Wiz. Before you go anywhere, call me day or night for hotel rates too low to publish. I'll save you up to 75% on over 500,000 hotels across the globe. You see, I've already done the research, so you don't have to spend time online trying to find the best deal. That's up to 75% off. Just call me, the Hotel Wiz. It's a free call, and you get instant access to rates too low to publish with no cancellation fees.
Make a free call now and save up to 75% off your hotel rooms the next time you're going somewhere for business or pleasure. Call the Hotel Wiz now and get instant access to rates to load up publish. 800-811-3471. 800-811-3471. 800-811-3471. Call the Hotel Wiz right now for rates too low to publish at 800-811-3471.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box row. To
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
When I think about this song in particular, Fight the Power, I think about the summer of 19, as Chuck D appropriately said, 1989, a number, another summer. I think about the summer of 89 because that's when, in fact, Fight the Power came out and had a chance to go to the movie theater that summer and see that movie. Do the Right Thing. You know, that movie was etched in my mind, and this song was etched in my mind to the point that I went out and bought the tape, the single, the tape. Those that are young don't understand what a tape is, but those that are of a certain age understand exactly what I'm talking about. Went out and bought the tape and played the tape every single day. Like, I had one of those. Like the next year, right, in 1990, who remembers those yellow Sony Walkman, right? Like the yellow one. But I had one, I had a Sony Walkman, but it was like the silver one. So you know, I think it, I don't know if it played, I can't remember if it played like AM, FM, but it definitely played tapes. So I would play that to death if I was out, if I was at, see, this is the thing, right? Like those of us of a certain age, the kids nowadays, they're out and about. They're on their phones. They're playing the video games and those types of things. But when we were young, we would have our Walkman. That would sort of be what I think akin to what the kids do today with the phones and the video games and the switches and all of these type of things. You know, we had Game Boys, right? Like I think Game Boys were like the early 90s. If I remember correctly. But Public Enemy really started, just Public Enemy as a whole, the group, started to shape my thoughts on society even more. And so I really credit Public Enemy. I mean, it was, you know, Public Enemy, NWA, Ghetto Boys, etc. Those are the groups I really, during that time, and that was during my teenage years, in my mid-teenage years, really started to listen to the music, change sort of my, be more socially conscious, if you will. And Public Enemy definitely was a catalyst for that. As we take a listen back during the course of today's program, a Memorial Day weekend type of program, listening to some throwback music and, of course, thinking about our troops and those that are no longer with us. As I mentioned, still to come here on the program, I've got thoughts on Pete Rose, who is now eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Where are the showmen in the NBA? Where are the Magic Johnsons, the Jason Williamses, the Jason Kidds? Where are they in the NBA? But let's talk now Wolves Thunder, with the Thunder now taking a 2-0 lead by virtue of the 118-103 victory on Thursday over the Timberwolves. Game 3 is going to take place on Saturday in Minnesota, so it's an opportunity for Minnesota to come back. I wouldn't consider this a commanding lead. I think there are some opportunities for Minnesota to get back into this series. Yes, right now, if a team is ahead 2-0, you got to give credit to the Thunder. But I don't think the Timberwolves are totally out of the series. Now, if you go back to If you go to Minnesota and lose game three, then pretty much you're out of the series, because now you have to win four of the next four games, while the Thunder only have to win one of the next four. I think there are some opportunities. One, and I'm going to look at it from a Minnesota standpoint, because I know that a lot of people coming into the series pick Minnesota to win, and I understand why. Just did away with the Lakers like the Lakers were nothing. Did away with the Warriors, although a lot of that had to do with the fact that Stephen Curry did not play. You have to factor that into this thing. Nonetheless, the Wolves handled their business. Plus, I think you have to go back to even before the Warriors and the Lakers series in the playoffs. You have to go back to the last month of the season when the Wolves started to play a lot better, because we expected a lot from the Wolves this season, especially last year playing in the Western Conference Finals, which I thought that the Wolves were going to win the Western Conference Finals the way that the Wolves had swept through the first couple of rounds of the Western Conference playoffs. And Luka at that time, Luka and Dallas just was not having it. But again, some opportunities, because, you know, you look at Ant-Man. Ant-Man didn't play particularly well. I mean, he wasn't bad, but he didn't play Ant-Man style that we were used to seeing in game one with only 18 points. But then in game two, he explodes with 32. And see, we've seen that from Anthony Edwards, where, you know, he really, if you think about it, throughout the course of these playoffs, he hasn't been consistent per se. It's been the other guys, and in particular, Julius Randle. And if Julius Randle, okay, is only going to give you 6 points on 2 of 11 shooting from the field, that's not going to get it done. I think that's where things went wrong for the Timberwolves. And really, in that game, I thought things really started to go wrong for Minnesota in the second quarter when OKC started to pull away slightly. Some mistakes by the Timberwolves down the stretch in the latter part of the second quarter. OKC capitalized on some of those mistakes. I mean, that could have been maybe a 2-point ball game with OKC having the lead. Instead, it was an 8-point lead that turned into a third quarter in which OKC outscored Minnesota by 14 points, 35-21. That was your ball game right there. Now, give Minnesota credit to kind of, you know, flip the script a little bit. Outscored by 14 in the third, outscored OKC by 7 in the fourth. And maybe that's something that Minnesota can build upon. I don't know. You know, Julius Randle's been pretty consistent. He really's been the key for Minnesota the last couple of months. It's really been about Julius Randle, because you know what Anthony Edwards can do. But again, Anthony Edwards hasn't been, like, he's been good and he's been great at times, but he hasn't been consistently good. So that's of a concern for me. I think he comes back, Rudy Gobert's going to give you defense. You know, he's not going to give you points per se, but boy, he's got to have, he's 7 foot tall. Like, he's got to have more than 5 points in this ball game. So, you know, McDaniels did his thing with 22 points, but you've got to get more from Randall. Connolly, I think Connolly's going to give you something in spurts. He's an older player. He's still a good player, can still knock down the three, still is going to give you something, but it's going to be in spurts, and it may not be, particularly at his age now, throughout the course of a whole game. So Randall's definitely going to have to step up. That said, I also am going to give the OKC Thunder defense a lot of credit. This has been a really good defense. I thought that Houston's defense against the Warriors was as good as you could play. The Warriors just did what they needed to do. A veteran team, and Houston was just young. just a young team didn't do what it needed to do. But I thought Houston's defense was really, really good. Well, look, OKC's defense, it's not as intense as Houston's defense is, but man, it is really, really good. I think that really played a lot. Look, Minnesota missed some shots, but you got to give OKC credit from a defensive perspective. I mean, we look at SGA. I mean, he gets the MVP award. Like, to me, there was no doubt that he was going to be the MVP of the league. I get it. Joker is Joker. He's like the most consistent player that you're going to find, as I spoke about last week. But SGA is as consistent too. He can hit shots from anywhere. Plus, he's going to play some D. He's going to give you some steals. He's going to do some other things. You know, even throughout the course of these playoffs, like SGA, he's been fairly consistent, but he's been double-teamed also, even in this series. Like, he broke out. This was a breakout game where he had the 38 points, right? Because he was able over the course of at least that first game on Tuesday, figure out the Minnesota defense. Minnesota was throwing double teams at him. He had to figure it out, but he was able to distribute the basketball, not make mistakes. And, that was key in game one. And then in game two, he just went off, 38 points in the game, but he also got some help. And that's sort of where things, particularly from Jalen Williams, because Jalen Williams, he needed to really step up. Especially against Denver. Like, he gave you a 6-point outing, a 6-point effort in game six before he came back, had a solid game, and OKC went on to blow Denver out in game seven. I just thought the youth for Denver was for OKC, and that game was going to play out, and it in fact did. But then you also got 22 points from Chet Holmgren. I mean, Chet Holmgren's going to give you some buckets around the basket. He's going to give you some alley-oops. He's a 7-footer. He's going to block some shots. But if he's giving you 22 points, then you're on, that's good. That's really good. And then some of the other players stepping up as well. Harkenstein giving you 8 rebounds. But look, I really feel like, this wasn't, it didn't feel as big of a dominating performance as the 15 points would indicate. And I feel like there's some opportunity for Minnesota, and I do believe that Minnesota will take game 3. Your thoughts, you can hit me up via X at DWare1, at DWare1 up next here. On the program, I'm going to give you my thoughts on Pete Rose now being eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Hey, Patrick, right here. This being your 5th Super Bowl, what do you remember most about this whole process with respect to the first Super Bowl? And when I say the whole process, I mean the preparation, not only for the game, but the media and all of that, as opposed to now. How do you kind of compare that? Is it still kind of fun for you?
Yeah, it's still fun. I mean, every Super Bowl is its own experience. But I think more than anything, it's just preparing, because you know the process. You know what it takes throughout the week, and it gives you more experience and more calm, where you're not worried, and you just continue to work to be the best version of yourself you can be and learn from your previous Super Bowls, and hopefully you can play even better in the game when you get out there on Sunday.
Ron Washington, the manager of the Los Angeles Angels, you're old school. So you've instituted this deal where the players are not allowed to have cell phones in the locker room.
Well, you got a young group, and you're just trying to get some cohesiveness going on. What does goes on the inside of that clubhouse is our sanctuary. I really don't want to have a whole lot to say about that, because it's out there, and it's out there improperly. I'm going to leave that at that. I don't want to talk about that.
I got you. But I like it. I like it, Ron. I like it.
I appreciate that. That's because you have a sane mind.
Box to Row live on Radio Row. We're here at Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And I'm going to tell you what. We've got a very special guest, right? He was coming over here to talk to us, right? Everybody wanted a piece of him. And now we're able to talk with him. He is the one and only Drew Brees.
Just hanging out, having a good time, enjoying Media Row, enjoying the city.
Yeah.
You having a good time?
I'm having a great time. 15 years ago today, the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Man. Man, that was a pretty epic time. It was a pretty special time. You know, that was an incredible journey that 2009 season. Just the whole experience was unbelievable. It was surreal, and the city deserved it. The fan base deserved not a dry eye in the house. It was unbelievable.
Kelvin Sampson, the head men's basketball coach at Houston.
Being raised in Pembroke and the Lumbee Nation was always a badge of honor. But getting the eagle feather is a sign of achievement and respect, and I think how you treat other people. Never forgetting where you came from. I grew up in a time when there was segregation. My dad taught and coached in an all-Indian conference. I mean, coming from that area, I learned a lot of life lessons, but getting the eagle feather is a tremendous honor. But you know right away, it's something you share with a lot of other people.
It was Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Dave Roberts, manager of the LA Dodgers, to be person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers, what does that mean to you?
There's not many of us in baseball to do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, what HBCUs mean to people, you know, and having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, you know what I'm saying, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent, and often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light, and people want to feel like they want to be here, and so putting it on the national stage is really big. You know, most of the time these kids don't get televised games, you know what I'm saying, so be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, you know what I'm saying? And getting, you know, the NBA, you know, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully, like, build this thing bigger.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip-hop. And it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
Kevin Hart joins us here.
Right now, I'm on cloud nine. This is the time where I'm in demand, so you make the best of it. You pick great projects, you get behind them, and you put them out. And the goal is to keep them coming. So that's making sure that you're in control of your destiny. And right now, I am.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. All right, let's talk a little Pete Rose here on the program. And the reason being, you know, Pete Rose should have been in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to lay all of that out. But the reason why Pete Rose is now eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Remember, he received a lifetime ban, actually accepted. And I had to go back and look at this. So Pete Rose accepted a lifetime ban from Major League Baseball. He accepted this ban, but I guess in reverse, Major League Baseball would not say whether it would not confirm that he did bet on baseball as a manager, as I read it. I didn't remember that. I thought he was just banned, but Major League Baseball never said that definitely Pete Rose bet on baseball. They never offered, and I'm reading kind of the article right now, offered a formal verdict. Okay, so that's where we were with that. But interestingly enough, and you look, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, who, by the way, was a guest on this program years ago. Rob Manfred is a lawyer, okay? And I thought it was interesting that what he said was, it wasn't just Pete Rose that is now eligible for the Hall of Fame, but it's also 17 other individuals because what happened was Rob Manfred said that they can be reinstated if they received a lifetime ban. Whoever that was, in Shoeless Joe Jackson, as part of the Black Sox scandal in 1917, all of that, which is big history when you think about Major League Baseball. But all of them can now be reinstated. Basic bottom line is you can be reinstated after you've passed on. And we know Pete Rose passed on in September of last year. And so now he will be eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. You have a certain amount of time that you're eligible. I think it's 25 years that you're eligible. If you don't get in within that time frame, then it goes to the Veterans Committee. And so the next meeting will be in December of 2027. And I mean, you know, I thought Pete Rose should have been. And this is a sad situation, I think, because to me, when I think back, I mean, there's so many layers here. When I think back to Pete Rose and the player, he had over 4,000 hits, right? And look, nowadays, when a guy, now as baseball has evolved and you have all of these different numbers, I don't keep up with, you know, OPS and this and WAR and all that. I'm old school, right? What's your average look like? How many home runs do you have? How many RBI or runs do you drive in? Stolen bases is part of that. How many runs do you score? On base percentage is part of that, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of stats in Major League Baseball. Okay, especially when you're talking about, okay, should a guy be in the Baseball Hall of Fame? Pete Rose had an above 300 batting average lifetime. I can't remember right now off the top of my head if it was 303 or 306. It was one of the two. But he had an above 300 batting average. Not only that, he had in excess of 4,200 hits as a player. Fantastic player in the 70s in particular. He was part of the Big Red Machine, right? He's part of the Phillies. The Phillies won a World Series, right? So, like, this guy should no doubt be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But as a manager, he was found to have bet on baseball, albeit on his own team. I think that's one of the things to me that's significant here. Look, it's interesting. In these times where betting is like, you've got so many companies, even ESPN is in the betting business. Right? Like, you've got so many companies that offer betting and it's legal now, and all of them, all of the pro entities have embraced it now because they know that they can generate revenue from it. It was like betting was this taboo thing at once upon a time. Of course, you can't bet on your own team, and you can't bet on your own sport. I would take it a step further. I'm not clear if this is a rule within each respective league, but that you shouldn't be able to bet at all. I would take it as far as that. In other words, let's see, if you're a Major League Baseball player, you should not be able to bet on the NFL for me, because I think sometimes you have to save people from themselves. And I know everybody's got rights and we've got rights and this isn't right and we should have all of these rights and we've got all these rights. But at the end of the day, if somebody has a gambling problem, why even put them in that position? Now, you can also say, well, they may find a way to do it anyway, which we have seen. I mean, it's not like we haven't seen players still in all sports that have still bet on games. And as a matter of fact, we've seen it maybe even more recently in the NFL, where guys are receiving like a year ban for still betting. All of that said, you couldn't do it back then, and I think it was even illegal. So, look, Pete Rose ended up spending time in jail because of tax evasion. As I mentioned, it was an agreement whereas he said he accepted the lifetime ban, and Major League Baseball never said whether or not he actually bet on baseball. But look, to me, it's two separate things. What Pete Rose was and the actions that he did, which were against the rules, right? Like, you know, follow the rules, right? He wasn't supposed to do that. But to me, I mean, the player had nothing to do with that. But again, he accepted this lifetime ban. And that's where it gets kind of complex, because this is the other thing. Like, we've got these, all of these players that have taken performance-enhancing drugs and haven't been voted to the Baseball Hall of Fame, but are up for consideration, and those that have been accused of, or we know that have in fact done it, their percentages seem to go up every year in terms of the amount of votes that they need. I believe you need 70% of the vote to be inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And these percentage numbers go up every year for these players that either took performance-enhancing drugs or were accused of doing so. And to me, that is way more egregious than what Pete Rose did in terms of betting on baseball. And again, he bet on his own team. Look, betting is betting. It was wrong at the time. But look, he bet on his own team. Like, and yes, maybe you make strategic moves to try and win a game. Okay, well, you're trying to win the game, right? Like, it's not like he bet against the other team. That would have been egregious, and I would have even have had to change my stance. If, even though I'm saying, and it may sound like I'm saying two different things, even though I'm saying what Pete Rose did as a manager is different than what he did as a player, but I would also say, I would have to change my tune if he had bet on the other team in a game that he was managing. He was betting on his own team, right? So it's one of those deals where it's just a sad episode now, because he has passed on and now he's eligible for the Hall of Fame. He should have been in the Hall of Fame. He's passed on. Now he's eligible for the Hall of Fame. I guess the next question is, will he in fact get into the Hall of Fame? The Veterans Committee, former player. I mean, now, you know, from things that I'm hearing, you know, Veterans Committee members are staunch in terms of following the rules. You know what I mean? So he may not get it. Depends on who's on the Veterans Committee, all of those kinds of things. But I think you've got to separate. Like, you've got to separate Pete Rose, the player, from Pete Rose, the manager, and what he did. And I think it's so sad. Look, he had an opportunity to admit it. That's the other thing. A lot of this, rest in peace to Pete Rose, but a lot of this falls on the shoulders of Pete Rose. Whether you agree with the lifetime ban, which, I mean, look, I mean, I think the bottom line is he didn't want to admit that he bet on baseball, even though Major League Baseball had all of this evidence that he bet on Major League Baseball. He was stubborn and decided not to admit it until 25 years later. Well, it's too late at that point, right? Because I think if he admits it at the time, I don't remember what was the thought process at the time. Was it because, you know, maybe he was going to go to jail because of it, if he admitted that he did it? Was it the shame? No, because that's the thing. Like, a guy like that, to me, who would not have admitted to something that he did that he know was wrong, part of that would be because he was such a great player that he knew that he brought shame onto the game. And maybe that's why. And then, of course, we've evolved. That was the late 80s, early 90s. 25 years later, things were different than they were 25 years previous. So it may be more accepting that if he comes forward and says, hey, I did that, that people would be more forgiving. And while they were, Major League Baseball was not. Okay? So it took another 20 plus years to get to this point where Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, says, Okay, all players that were permanently banned, excuse me, from Major League Baseball are now eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame. But guess what? We are, what are we in? May now? It's 4 months too late, you know, or 8 months too late. Pete Rose has passed on. You know, man, I just wish things could have been different back then, where Pete Rose would have said, I bet on the game. I think if that happened, I don't remember all of it, but I'm just thinking if that happened, he may not have gotten a lifetime ban. And where we are now, he would have already been in the Hall of Fame, and we would have moved on from this, because now betting is prevalent in baseball in all pro sports. Give me your I want to hear from you on this. Give me your thoughts. That's my take on Pete Rose. I want to hear from you. Hit me up via X at DWare1, at DWare1. Share your thoughts. We've got plenty more of this weekend edition of the program still to come. And where are the showmen in the NBA? Keep it locked.
The Body Armor State Games are coming to Greensboro this June. Registration is open to athletes of all ages and skill levels in 20 different sports. The Body Armor State Games feature 11,000 athletes and 600 teams. Don't miss out on North Carolina's largest sports festival of the year. Visit BodyArmorStateGames.org today. The Body Armor State Games are proud to partner with Truist, Lowe's Foods, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina.
BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs.
From the Game of the Week feature to interviews
to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered.
Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row?
BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches' bowls.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
And BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader.
Now, back to From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
You know, parents are the same, no matter time, no place. They don't understand that us kids are going to make some mistakes.
So we're back here on the program, Memorial Day weekend edition. And when I think about this song, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Parents Just Don't Understand, I think about the spring of 1988. I was an eighth grader. At that time, we called it junior high school. I remember playing baseball. And I remember this song in particular. I played second base, and we had a bad base. I mean, it wasn't a bad baseball team. I shouldn't say that. It wasn't a bad baseball team. Matter of fact, in 87, we went undefeated. I was playing rec ball. We went undefeated and won the title. And then in 88, we decided to move up to it was called County Ball. It was called County Ball. Shots out to Montgomery County, Maryland, Silver Spring. Right? It was called County Ball, which amounts today now to Travel Ball. But we didn't. It's not like we traveled all over the place. We played mainly where it was called county, because you traveled throughout the county, which was a big county. Montgomery County is a big county. And we didn't win a single game, you know, but I remember this song. It was still a good year. It was still a great year, even though we didn't have a great year in baseball. It was still a great year. And I remember this song from that year in 1988. So where are the showmen? Where are all of the showmen when it comes to the NBA, right? And I was on, I guess, Instagram, or it may have been even X the other day, and someone had posted, it was on X actually, and someone had posted about Jason Williams and saying something to the degree. And by the way, even before I start that, there are some people that are listening to the show that probably don't know who DJ Jeff or Fresh Prince are, okay? One of the look, you talk about the early part of hip-hop and a transition in hip-hop. Maybe not. I think when you talk about DJ Jeff and the Fresh Prince, you're talking about more the latter part of the 80s. And I mean, they were definitely, the duo was definitely a force. By the way, Fresh Prince to a lot of you all now is Will Smith. So Will Smith, the actor, yes, he was a rapper and he was part of the great group, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. Anyway, somebody's, you know, I was on X and just saw, you know, and then I went to Instagram and watched all of these clips of Jason Williams. They called him, nicknamed White Chocolate, right? And this is the thing, like I thought back, it just got me to thinking. We don't see players like Jason Williams in the NBA today. Yes, you've got all of these, you got guys that can cross you up, have tremendous handles. Kyrie, I mean, they say, you know, we say Kyrie Irving has the best handles, or we don't say it, it's said a lot, I would say that, that Kyrie Irving has the best handles the game has ever seen. Like, it's hard for me to say that because we're in a time where everything you point to, every time I hear something, it's always something about the most or something that's never been done in the history of the game. That's all you ever hear about today. And then we also always talk about, well, who, what's the greatest, and this is the greatest, and Kyrie Irving has the greatest handles of all time. Maybe he does. I don't know. You know, Earl the Pearl Monroe had some pretty good handles. I mean, there's some guys that had some handles as well. But in today's game, we see a lot of the crossover moves. We see a lot of guys that hit the floor. That's part of, more so I would say, the NBA is, hey, can you make somebody fall? Can you make them look bad? Even if you don't make the shot, we get a bunch of oohs and ahs. Even if you don't finish the play, you get a bunch of oohs and ahs. And, I mean, I think that's part of the game, and that's an exciting part of the game. I'm not hating on that. Like, I think that's an exciting part of the game. But we don't have showmen in the game. Name me one guy in the game that's a showman. Like, as great as Kyrie Irving's handles are, right, and he can handle the ball, free himself up, get his own shot, he can make guys hit the floor, all of those kinds of things, step back, hit the three, you know, all of those kinds. I mean, James Harden, I mean, his handle's crazy as well, can do all of those things as well. But where are the showmen? Like, where are the Jason Williams? Like, let's think about it. And look, for me, when I was coming up, the guy was Magic Johnson. Like, Magic Johnson, Showtime Lakers. Like, Magic Johnson, really, I mean, and we say Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and then Dr. J as well, helped to save the NBA. But Magic Johnson, I think, really took the NBA to another level of showmanship, if you will. And it allowed for Michael Jordan to come along, take it to an even further level. And now we are where we are. And that's sort of the history, the more recent history over the last 40 years plus of the NBA. So Magic Johnson was that guy, the no-look passes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he was a winner. And just obviously a phenomenal player. Like, we talk about the best of all time, and I know Steph Curry is moving up the list and all of those kind of things, but the best point guard to ever play the game was Magic Johnson, right? Like, Steph Curry is not even a point guard, not even a true point guard, okay? That's another story or another topic of conversation or debate for another day. Jason Williams came into the league. You talk about a showman, and you talk about all of these different handles. I was talking about the guys today that have the handles. Jason Williams had crazy, like Magic Johnson he had handles, but not like what I'm talking about with like a Jason Williams. And he would do these no-look passes and do these behind-the-back passes. And I mean, sometimes he would do things that would surprise his teammates. Like, his teammates weren't even ready. Like, I went back and looked at some of, and I would venture to say that some of what Jason Williams did and some of these no-look passes and the surprise passes that he would give to these teammates, some of them probably didn't finish. You didn't see, You didn't see any of the finish, non-finishes. You saw all of the finishes. But you could even tell that even when a guy finished, he wasn't expecting it. Jason Williams was absolutely phenomenal. And this is the thing. Like, we talk so much today about stats and all of that. And I would remind you that as great as Jason Williams was, those Sacramento Kings teams with, you know, with Chris Webber and Vlade Divac and all of those teams that were on the cusp or were good teams and trying to be on the cusp of challenging the Lakers at that time. And ultimately, Jason Williams got traded, and then it was really Mike Bibby and all those guys that really challenged the Lakers in the West. Jason Williams, we talk about the numbers. You know Jason Williams, and before I talk about the numbers, Jason Williams was, I will remind people, he was the starting point guard for the Miami Heat that won the championship in 2006 with Dwayne Wade and with Shaq. He was the starting point guard on that team. But for his career, Jason Williams averaged only 10.5 points per game and only 5.9 assists, which aren't great numbers. In any given season, the most points he averaged was 14.8 points per game, and he had some seasons with Memphis, and he had some good seasons, obviously, with Miami. Miami won the championship with him as the point guard. But it was a short time. I mean, it was really with those Sacramento teams, and he was only with Sacramento for like three seasons. Those aren't like great numbers. And just looking at the numbers here, the most assists he ever had in a year was 8.3, or averaged was 8.3 assists with Memphis during the 2002-2003 season. Right. Some of this was in the latter. You have to factor in, some of the reasons why the numbers are down, because the latter part of his career, he had gotten into some trouble and so forth like that as well. And some of those numbers went down. But from a showmanship perspective, Jason Williams was crazy good. I talked about Magic Johnson, right? I mean, go back to the days in the 70s, Earl the Pearl Monroe, right? Jason Kidd, right? Like even Jason Kidd, I mean, Jason Kidd was getting the kudos of being a showman coming out of high school. I remember when Jason Kidd was like the most talked about player coming out of high school, went to Cal, played under Todd Bozeman, and then ultimately came into the NBA and still had like the showmanship, right? Like, we don't see that in the NBA today. Like, I'm trying to think, and even before, I was trying to think, okay, who's a showman? Name me a person that you would say in the league right now that is a showman. I can't think of anybody. You've got guys that are going to do no-look passes. I mean, you got bigs, you know. Joker's out here doing no-look passes. You've got guys out here that can do no-look passes. You've got guys out here that have tremendous handle, that can make you hit the floor if you're thinking you're guarding them and they cross you up and you hit the floor and they hit a three-pointer. We've got guys that have these tremendous step-back abilities, whether it's a sidestep, whether it goes behind the back to pull up, fade away. We got all of that kind of stuff, right? But we don't have anybody like a Jason Williams in the game. We don't have anybody like a Magic Johnson in the game. We don't have anybody like a Earl the Pearl Monroe in the game. We don't have anybody like a Jason Kidd in the game. And to me, the NBA is missing that. It's a great game. The awareness of the NBA as it currently is as big as it's ever been. It's a global game. Talked about last week. The NBA's globalness is for recruitment. The NFL's globalness is because the NFL is a popular sport. We have no showmen in the NBA. Your thoughts? Hit me up via X at DWare1, at DWare1. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. For more information on Box to Row, visit our website, BoxToRow.com. Also, don't forget about the Box to Row YouTube channel. Great conversations that we've had over the years as well. Don't forget the 20-year celebration birthday bash of Box to Row is going to take place on Wednesday, August 20th in Raleigh. You want to be there. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.